Andesham, Jochneshva, Rajani, Karam, Hitva Grihan Sutan Bogan, Vaidarbhi Madirekshana, Anvadhavata Pandyesham, Jochne Varajani Karam, Hitva Grihan Sutan Bhogan, Vaidarbhi Madirekshana, Andvadhavata Pandyesham, Jochne Varajani Karam, Hitva Grihan Sutan Bhogan, Vaidarbhi Madirekshana, Anvadhavata Pandyesham, Jochne Varajani Karam,
Madhira Ikshana,
with enchanting eyes.
Anvadhavata,
followed.
Pandya
Isham.
King Malayadvaj.
Jochna Iva.
Like the moonshine.
Rajani Karam.
The moon.
Translation. Just as the moonshine follows the moon at night, immediately after King Malayadvaj departed from Pulachala, his devoted wife, whose eyes were very enchanting, followed him, giving up all homely happiness despite family and children. Purport. Just as in the Vanaprastha stage the wife follows the husband, similarly when the spiritual master retires for Nirjan Bhajan, some of his advanced devotees follow him and engage in his personal service. In other words, those who are very fond of family life should come forward in the service of the spiritual master and abandon so-called happiness afforded by society, friendship, and love. A verse by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in his Guru Vastika is significant in this regard. Yasya prasada bhagavat prasada. A disciple should always remember that by serving the spiritual master, he can easily advance in Krishna consciousness. All the scriptures recommend that it is by pleasing the spiritual master and serving him directly that one can attain the highest perfectional stage of devotional service. The word Madhirekshana is also significant in this verse. Srila Jiva Goswami has explained in his Sandarbha that the word Madhira means intoxicating. If one's eyes become intoxicated upon seeing the deity, he may be called Madhirekshana. Queen Vidarbha's eyes were very enchanting. Just as one's eyes are Madhirekshana when engaged in seeing the temple deity. Unless one is an advanced devotee, he cannot fix his eyes on the deity in the temple. So this is an analogy that Narad Muni is giving to Maharaj Puchina Barhishat. So everything in here has a very subtle significance, sometimes dual meanings. As we see here, is that from here on we'll see that he goes back and forth between the interaction between the husband and wife and interaction between the disciple and the guru. We'll see that both are happening in these verses as they go, and they get more and more deep as they continue. So the principle is that the living entity is connected to Krishna, and that service to Krishna is what we're trying to re-invoke, trying to reawaken within our heart. But unfortunately, we become distracted by the idea that we're going to control and enjoy this world. So then we spend our time trying to do this, trying to arrange in such a way that we have some potency other over what we want to control. It means either by administration, by our beauty, by our wealth, by our fame, by our position, by some way, or knowledge, renunciation. These things we try to gain control. Then through these, then we try to enjoy. So this is the principle of how the living entity is working in this world, because opulence then attracts that which can be enjoyed. Right? It means Krishna is the enjoyer, and he has great opulence. So then he attracts Lakshmi, who is the also, then is opulence. So opulence is attracted by opulence. We see that when Lakshmi Devi was very upset with Jagannath because he had gone off to Vrindavan and he wasn't paying any attention to her. She was sitting in Dwarka and he had gone off to Vrindavan. So then there was a great disturbance there. So she came there, you know, and showed her displeasure, started with her servants and caught the servants of Jagannath. They started beating them, abusing them, dealing with them in bad language, you know, manifesting her, you know, feminine displeasure. And it was something that had never been seen by anyone before, because they had always seen Lakshmi as always very peaceful, and she's basically speaking the perfection of the right-wing feminine attitude of just surrender, that I belong to this person. But here she was manifesting left-wing of that Vishnu belongs to me, so why he's off doing whatever he wants to do, why he's not with me. So she was very upset, so she went back to Dwarka. And then after Jagannath, he would come back. But then she won't let him in. She closes the gate. She decides that, you know, okay, you want to go to Vrindavan, right there, you go there. Be happy there. Why you want to come here to Dwarka? like that. We're happy here. You know, we have nice things here. We're happy. You go out to your, you know, little village there with a few flowers and other things like this. So then Jagannath didn't know what to do. So he has to sit on his cart all night, you know, out there alone. So then the next day, then he manifests great opulence. So he puts on his solid gold dress. All the ornaments, everything, his dress, everything is solid gold. Very, very opulent, very, very detailed. So this opulence then attracts the mind of Lakshmi. And then she becomes pleased with him and then lets him back in to the palace. So the principle is that the opulence attracts opulence. So how you say it? Like the saying, money makes money, right? You know, so this is the principle, is that we strive very hard to obtain opulence in some field, some kind of thing, you know, some wealth, some beauty, some fame, something. And then with this, the idea is then we will attract those things with which we want to then enjoy. So this is the principle that one gets caught up in this material world. So then the idea is that we should then use these opulences that we naturally have for Krishna's pleasure, like this. Then it reverses the process. Instead of taking us into the material energy, the same material endeavors, the same material qualities will take us out of the material energy. So here we see that Queen Vidarbha had very enchanting eyes. So in this age, that means that, in the material world, means enchanting eyes. They're very restless, they're dark, like this, you know, very mystical, this kind of aspect. So then this attracts attention. But here we see that these eyes aren't that way because they're trying to attract to her, but they're that way because she is attracted to Krishna. So because Krishna is Madan, so then she is attracted there, rather than the eyes, enchanting eyes means there's an aspect of attraction, like that. The Cupid aspect is there. But here it is not used to attract to her, but used is that Krishna has attracted her attention. But we see the same kind of eyes are there. The same kind of, you know, beauty is there in her eyes. So we see that whatever is there, it's not a problem of what is the qualities we have. It's just a question of whether we want to use them to draw others to us or use them to draw ourselves to Krishna. You know, in other words, draw Krishna to us. So this is the pivot that is there, we see, that is given in these verses, because they keep going back and forth between the material situation and the spiritual situation. So therefore, these things can be used in that way. One has opulence, he uses that to please Krishna. He has beauty, he uses that to please Krishna. He has knowledge, he uses that to please Krishna. Whatever one may have, he has abilities or potencies or power, prowess, he uses that to please Krishna. So in this way, still, the principle is there. Others are going to come forward, but their coming forward is different. It's a different thing. Maharaj Malayadwaj will naturally be attracted to Queen Vidarbha, but not on the sensual platform because of her devotional attitude. Because of that devotional attitude, then it will inspire him in devotional service. So in this way, then the husband and wife are able to inspire each other to go deeper into Krishna consciousness, though it is still using the same material principles. This is the amazing aspect. But this aspect has to be understood, that we're using these things not for ourselves, but for Krishna. So then we are able to inspire ourselves, inspire others in Krishna consciousness using these qualities. But when that attraction is there, it is not to bring them to us, and that's where it stops. It goes on. This is the meaning of guru. A guru means is that attraction is there, but it doesn't stop with the guru. It goes on. So it's a via media. So therefore, the qualities of the husband may attract the wife, but he brings the wife to Krishna. The wife may attract the husband, but she brings it to Krishna. You know, the parents are attracted by the child, the parents, like this. There's so much attraction is going on by these qualities of opulence. But it doesn't stop there. If we stop it there, then that's materialistic. Right? But if we don't, it continues on to Krishna. then it's not. Then that becomes devotional service. So it's a very subtle point. So if that's understood, then one sees is that what the mind is looking for to be engaged in is achieved. But at the same time, it doesn't carry the lower qualities of passion and ignorance, but it carries the quality of goodness or pure goodness. Pure goodness is what we're trying to get to. But the passion, ignorance is removed from it. Therefore, the distress is removed from it. Because distress comes from passion and ignorance. Distress doesn't come from goodness. Goodness creates happiness, it creates illumination, it creates upliftment. So therefore, it's just a matter of the pivot on which side we want to use it. Because if we use it for ourselves, then because it's for ourselves, then the distress is also ours. We can't just decide, okay, I'll just take what's good, I'll leave what's bad. It won't work like that. Unfortunately, it just doesn't work like that. You have to take the whole package. Right? You like the car, but you also have to put gas inside. You can't just say, yes, I like the driving part, but all this maintenance and changing tires, putting gas and taking it in and getting it fixed up, that I don't like. It won't work like that. You have to take both. So when it's for Krishna, then the good is for Krishna, but also the bad is for Krishna. But being the via media, there is also pleasure in that. Right? The mother is serving the child simply for the child's benefit. She gets pleasure from that. But the pleasure is coming because the child is pleased. Child's not pleased, she's not pleased. Right? Like that. So the same way is when Krishna is pleased, we're pleased. But we're the medium for those qualities in which we are hankering in the material world. That is the beauty of it, is whatever we're interested in the material world, that's fine. But then become the medium for using that for Krishna. That is what is being pointed out. The main point that is being given is then of serving the spiritual master. So then, under the guidance of the spiritual master, we're able to understand how to do that. What is the technique of doing this? This is what's important, because otherwise on our own we may speculate. We may not understand how to do this. So we see that by studying Srila Prabhupada's books, by seeing his example, by hearing the pastimes of the acharyas and the Lord and his devotees, or like this example here, then we see what it means. Then it becomes practical for us. It becomes alive for us. So the Bhagavatam shouldn't be seen just as a philosophical treatise, but it should be seen as how to practically apply the philosophy. Like here we see, what is the mood between husband and wife, or between the disciple and the guru, or between one devotee and another, in all situations. The Bhagavatam is giving all of these things. So then this is the idea, is that we can take example from these wonderful stories in the Bhagavatam and the Chaitanya Charitamrita. We can see how it is that the devotees engage themselves in all their material activities. Right here, it's just describing a husband and wife leaving and going to the forest. But how they're doing this for Krishna, right? What is their attitude? This then gives us the specialness. Any questions on this? Krishna or karma.
Yeah, in other words, is the devotee still being pushed by karma, or after initiation the karma's gone and it's Krishna directly dealing with it?
This is a very subtle point, and one has to look at in a very fine way. Because we see that the point is given that once one takes initiation, there's no karma. But at the same time, when reactions happen to us, we say that it's our karma. So we have to be able to reconcile these things. So basically what happens is when one takes up devotional service, and specifically at the time of initiation, bhajana kriya, then one's karma is removed. Like that. This is explained in the 10th canto, I think it's 10:14:8. It's that verse that says that the devotee, by performing a service and tolerating, you know, whatever previous results are coming to him, then going back to Godhead is his birthright. It's a very famous verse. So in there, Prabhupada explains that the karma is removed. There is no more karma. But the material world is meant for the reformation of the living entity. So to reform a bad attitude, whether one is a devotee or not a devotee, the reform is the same process. Does that make sense? That's an essential point, just that point. Then we go on. Does that make sense? Means that if you want to, let's say you have a child, they're a devotee child, and you have a child who's not a devotee, and they're both misbehaving. The correction for both is the same. Misbehaving is an item that needs to be corrected. Right? So then, in that misbehavior, the way you'll do, you'll explain to both of them how it's wrong. You know, you'll get them engaged in activities that are correct for the situation, so that they learn how to adjust their attitude. So this is then what's happening, is Krishna's removed the karma, except for the element of the body. The gross and subtle body remain. Otherwise, if he removed all karma, then we wouldn't have any gross or subtle form, which would be a little hard to perform devotional service. So that much remains, but the attitude is still there. So then, therefore, then Krishna arranges situations for your attitude to be corrected. So since that attitude was gained by performance of activities, and that has a material reaction, the correction will look the same. So it's not karma, it's Krishna. He's arranging that you're corrected. But it'll be the same form, because its source is the same. You've performed a materialistic activity that was wrong, that should give you a material reaction that will correct that situation. But Krishna's removed that reaction. Now he himself then arranges a similar thing. The difference will be is that the volume of it will be maybe changed. If the attitude's very bad, then it may be practically full. If it's not, then it will be reduced. If the attitude's gone by the process of devotional service, then that doesn't need to be done. So therefore, many times devotees will find they do their chart, things don't go according to that, because one may have corrected that situation so that reaction doesn't come. That's one aspect. The other aspect is Krishna does it in his own time. If it's according to karma, it just comes, just right after another, just how it's supposed to come. But Krishna may hold back one reaction, you know, and give something else and then switch it and do however he likes, when he likes, so you don't know how it will go. So therefore, also many times things don't work according to how, you know, the materialistic sciences say we should get our reactions. So that aspect is also there. But it's Krishna who's taking care. But in the preliminary stages of devotional service, Krishna's overseeing it, but he's doing it still through his external energy. So the external energy as his servant then gives us those situations and creates those experiences that will be there under Krishna's direction to correct us. But as we get more advanced, you know, we see the great devotees, then it's different. Krishna himself personally gets involved, like Prahlad Maharaj. He doesn't just arrange. And that way, sometimes he himself personally comes. When he was thrown off the mountain, personally he caught him. And then when he was going to be killed by Hiranyakashipu, then he personally came from the column. But things like, you know, the elephants not stamping on him, the snakes not biting him, he's just arranging through the modes of nature. What we see is that the great devotees, many times Krishna comes himself like that. So that is actually what's going on. It's a devotee, his karma is not there. But it looks like it. Therefore, because we know that the source of this being having to be corrected in this way is because of my bad activities, therefore the devotee can naturally look at it, it's my karma. What I'm getting is actually not my karma, but I'm getting this punishment because of what I've done, like that, which was karma. right? I perform karma. So it's my karma. It means I did the activity. So we're talking about karma means the activity I did before, not karma meaning the reaction I'm getting now. So that's how the devotee purifies. Because if you look at it, the reaction that comes now, then it closes down the knowledge, the vision. Because then you will see the medium through which it's come through this person. But actually, it's that person is just has been arranged as that person has an attitude that matches your attitude. So therefore, the combination is there. It means they're willing to do to you what you deserve, like that. So they will get a reaction for that. That will complicate them because they took part. But at the same time, is if we look at it, it actually has come because we have done something before. We have behaved badly with somebody like that. We didn't deal nicely, or we let somebody down, or we dealt improperly with money, or, you know, something. We misused some opulence, some relationship we didn't act properly in. So because of that, then in this lifetime we get the reaction. It's coming through somebody because that's the way everything works. Nothing will not come through somebody. Means one living entity's reactions are given to them, supplied by another living entity. That's the amazing management of Maya. You know, so even if it looks like it's a natural cause, there's a demigod who's arranging it. So there's some person who's giving us what we deserve. Yeah.
So sometimes when you're saying it like that, I'm thinking of the negative stuff that's coming to fit into that category. But you're also including the positive.
Everything is, yeah. But positive we don't complain about. You know, no one's sitting there going, man, how come God gave me this $1 million? I mean, I can't, you know, I mean, what is this? I mean, you know, can't he get real? I mean, it's like, you don't hear that. People only complain, how come God gave me this bad situation? They never complain about the good situation. You know? Yeah, yeah. It means that's there. It means in the more advanced stages, then that's there. Means in the beginning, the living entity has to be happy. So he's looking for happiness. It's the nature of the soul. So we're looking at the present, we tend to look towards material happiness. So if we situate ourselves according to, you know, Krishna's rules, we can gain that material happiness. But then, and avoid, you know, it means the material happiness is, you know, mode of goodness. So it's pleasant. It's not ecstatic. Right? It means your ecstasy comes from the mode of passion, and so does the great calamities. That's where they come out of. But in goodness, it's just pleasant, so then anything disturbing is just kind of annoying. But in passion, you know, it's ecstasy and it's disaster, you know, like that. So goodness, just it's okay, it's nice. So then from there, then we start to be able to distinguish between, because the material has been reduced down to something pleasant, constant. Like a Brahmin's always happy, right? But they're not, it's just pleasantly nice all the time, you know? All situations, they're okay. Then they can distinguish between that happiness and spiritual happiness, what they get from spiritual activities. So they go from Sukh into Ananda. That is the bridge. So that's why it has to be, because from passion it's hard, because it's so intense, the happiness, you completely forget what's going on. And the distress is also so intense that you tend to forget what's going on. You tend to focus on the external. So the idea is you're trying to get to the internal. So then that means is then you have to be dealing with the mode of goodness, so that then you can distinguish between, the intelligence can distinguish between the two. Because the mind generally won't distinguish. Mind just accepts. So if it's accepting this, it won't notice the other. Right? You're eating one thing, it's nice. Unless through the senses, the intelligence points out, hey, there's something better here, then you'll change. But if you don't notice it, you'll be happy eating whatever you're eating. Right? So the intelligence then has to see the difference. You have to be able to discriminate. Then the mind starts to look at it and consider it. Right? Then it contemplates it by contemplation. Then it gets attracted. That attraction turns into attachment. Then you perform. But does that make sense? Like that. So that's why it's the process is there. So you're trying to, it means we're trying to become happy, but we're trying to become happy in a way that we don't become unhappy. Right? And then from that platform of just being happy, then we start to see the transcendental happiness. Then we can transfer from the material to the spiritual, like that. So that's the thing. Unless you reduce one thing down to just pleasant, then you can't understand the great happiness on the other side. Because that happiness doesn't have the distress. That's where we see the difference, is that it's so much more happy than the other, plus it doesn't carry the opposite effect. Because however materially happy you are, know that you're going to be that much materially distressed. That's all. It's they go together. You know, it's generally we tend to avoid that kind of contemplation. But that's the reality. You know, we're eating something, wow, this is great, this is ecstatic, like this, like that. And then, yes, then about 3 hours later, then we're going, oh, like this. You know, but we don't connect the two. You know, that's the funny thing, is we don't connect. You know, I remember that was one of the greatest shocks of my life when I went to India, and you get a bad stomach, and you know, you get diarrhea and all these things. After about 6 weeks of this, then someone pointed out that what I ate had a direct connection with the diarrhea. I was shocked that the two had anything to do with each other. You know, eating's eating and going to the toilet's going to the toilet. What do they have to do with each other? Like that. So it's, you know, the tendency is the living entity doesn't connect the two halves because they're opposite. So we tend to not connect opposites, but opposites are the same. That's why they attract, because they're the other side of the same thing. Like that, right? Does that make sense? Okay. Anything else? Sir? Yes.
Yes, I was wondering, there's happiness in different and distress in different modes of nature. So I was wondering, like, happiness in the mode of goodness, I mean, does that also lead to distress? I mean, because I know there are ways that you can be happy without...
Yeah, well, basically there'll be something there, because... But it's very mild. But it's not necessarily your distress, it may be others. Like on Satyaloka, they're situated in goodness. So they personally don't feel any distress. But they feel some distress seeing how others in the material world want to be happy and can't. And they're finding distress in that. So that's their distress. So there's always something like that. Because the more subtle you get, the more subtle you notice the anomalies in the material world. Like that. So therefore something very mild bothers you. You know? It's just like someone in the mode of passion, then let us say someone they have a very intimate relationship with then says something unpleasant to them. That will give them distress. But if they just, you know, for a moment didn't act, you know, just went out of character, it wouldn't really be noticed. Because the passion's so strong, because you have desire, you don't notice those things. But if you're in goodness, you would notice that. You would notice that drop of relationship just for that moment. That would give you distress. So it's more subtle. But we can see as that giving distress, the distress is on a very, very mild, it's very subtle also. But of course, because we're subtle, it's strong to us. But it's actually not compared to someone else in passion or ignorance. Therefore, for them, then the natural thing, because they're in goodness, then they start to look, well, where is that situation where these things don't happen? Where is that? So then they turn to knowledge and spiritual life. You know, so then they start to taste the transcendental happiness. Does that make some sense? So that's why it's recommended that platform's there, because whatever you want, you'll get. It is basically in perception just as intense, right? It means if you're a very quiet person, then a little bit of activity is a lot, right? So in the same way as if your senses are subtle, then some very subtle happiness is a lot, right? If you're passionate, then it takes a lot. If you're ignorant, it has to be caustic to create something, you know? It has to be bent to kind of like create, because the senses are dull, to create something like that. So, but the perception is the same. Just like the ant feels it's living 100 years, the human feels like that, Brahma feels that. Though it is different, you know? So the same way as situating oneself in goodness, there is the idea that I won't enjoy as much. Passion will give much more happiness, but it doesn't. It gives more distress. That is definitely noticed, and it's very severe. In goodness, it's an annoyance, but for the person, it feels distressful, but it doesn't throw them off track. You won't find them, you know, shooting themselves and doing other things like that. They will turn to the alternative of getting more deep into why. The other one, it's not so much why. You identify with it too strongly. Like passion, you have to identify with it. Ignorance, you have to identify. Goodness, you are part of it. There is some identity, but at the same time, there's also the knowledge that you're not that. So you're getting a dual aspect. You know, the spiritual aspect and the material aspect are happening. The mother knows that I'm not the mother, this is not the child. But at the same time, is, you know, they're like the guru, they're training the child, they're bringing him up in Krishna consciousness. But at the same time, is there is that exchange of parental affection. So it's dual, like that. Is that... So they're getting more, but someone who's totally absorbed, then when things don't go the way they want, they get totally distressed, you know, because the relationships break down. So in the mode of goodness, they don't break down, right? That it's you experience the distress, but it's not in a breakdown of relationship, like that. While in passion, it's from a breakdown. Does that make some sense? Means in passion, because you're into it for your own purposes. Therefore, when it doesn't go the way you want, you pull back or put your attention somewhere else. The other person will notice that. So it's very obvious, very gross. And that's very painful, that you thought a relationship was there and you notice that they're making their connection somewhere else. You're not the connection. But in the mode of goodness, because of duty, you're still the connection. Though they didn't put, maybe for that moment, didn't put their heart into it. So relationship remains, though its life was reduced. That will create the pain. So in other words, it wakes one up. The whole idea of the situation of happiness and distress is to learn. So the tendency is passion and ignorance. We don't learn so much because we are so committed to it. But in the mode of goodness, because the commitment is more to the activity itself as a duty and to please Krishna, but not that we're seeing that what I'm going to get out of it, but because it pleases Krishna is the proper thing to do, then naturally, if you please Krishna, I'll be as pleased as I could be. So then it's the commitment is less. Means commitment is less, meaning materially, not in our endeavor. You're probably finding goodness, the commitment is more. Right, a relationship based in the mode of goodness will probably be a deeper commitment and deeper taste than in passion, like that. But it's subtle. That's the thing. It's not so gross. Does that make some sense? Like that. So that is what is being offered. But it's the tendency is we take up because of our impersonal background and that. Means Prabhupada's mantra, Nirvisheshu Nivadi, doesn't say saving us from misdirected personalism. It says he's saving us from impersonalism or voidism. So the tendency is we think spiritual life means impersonal. If it's spiritual life, I don't deal with the senses, deal with the emotions, deal with relations, deal with nothing. It's all Maya. No, those things are there. Dealing with them for ourselves, that's Maya. Dealing with them how Krishna says, that's not Maya. Right? The mother taking care of the child, if she's doing it how Krishna says the child should be taken care of, all those emotional experiences are not Maya. Right? But if she's doing it for herself, it is Maya. So it's not the thing that's Maya, it's how you deal with it, whether it's Maya or not. That's the thing. Money, if it's used properly, is not Maya. It's a tool to use in Krishna. If it's misused, it's Maya. So that's the whole point. So because of the impersonal, we try to deal with spiritual life that we're not people. Right? We're not senses. We don't have a mind. You know, we don't have identity. So then that creates a vacuum. And then since we don't know how to engage those, then we flip to the other side because there's the need. At some point, someone has to address all these things in the conditioned state. Then the difficulty comes is because we don't know how to do it spiritually, then we just do it materially. Does that make sense? We just flip But the point is we don't want to go from one side to the other, because they're both the same thing. They're still impersonal. We want to be in the middle. That's where the personal is. So the middle then is balanced like that. The middle doesn't attract either side, right? But the those who are the right wing, then they're out there fighting with those who are left wing, right? But no one's even noticing the people in the middle. That's the thing. They pleasantly just go on their own way and couldn't care less, because what they're doing, they're satisfied. Because their life is balanced. It's normal. It's the people on the extremes, they have the problems like that. So it's just they're tasting this extreme today. Tomorrow they'll be on this side, right? I remember it was, you know, in the 60s, you walk down the street and you have long hair. And then all the truckies, then they're all with their nice, you know, shaved heads and flat tops and, you know, with their bare grease holding it up and everything. And they're goofing on us. Look at these guys that look like girls, right? And they're having a good time. Then I went to India, right? And then, you know, after many, many years, then I come back to America. And then I'm walking down the street with my shaved head, right? And then they're the truckies again. They all have long hair. And now they're all goofing on the guy with the bald head, you know? So, you know, they'll just flip back and forth, back and forth. Now, along, you know, now they're back to their bald heads again. So it's like, that's the whole thing. It's a roller coaster. So the idea is to situate yourself in the middle, and then life will be as pleasant as possible and the easiest to realize Krishna and get out of here and go back to Krishna and actually get, you know, the happiness we're looking for. Is that okay? Yeah? Okay. Anything else, sir? Okay, last point then. Yeah. Yeah. One-stop shop, yeah. I used to say, if you're aware, because you can't do all things at once, the mind needs to focus. So as you read Bhagavatam, then you'll see something like this here. Okay, so then within our mind, then we contemplate. Okay, vanaprastha means that the husband and wife, then they engage in some way in that ashram. So if it's favorable, they go together. If it's not, then they may remain separate. But the principle is there. What's the attitude is there. You know? Like, does that make some sense? Then at this point, you understand what will come later. And then some other times, he's talking about something that's now, or something he's talking about something that's younger. So you're older, but talks about brahmacharya ashram, student life. Then you know what it means. So then, as an elder in the society, then you can create an atmosphere in which there can be, you know, proper student life. So all these things you can contemplate. So that's one thing, is the Bhagavatam. Chaitanya Charitamrita also gives that application. Another place where you see a lot of it, but you have to be really aware of it and not get caught up in the emotions that are there, is the Mahabharata or Ramayana. That's also just what is the social structure like that. But so those things, the Puranas are the place where it's seen like that, the place where it's seen. The laws are given in Manu, but the application is not shown there like that. So for those who have the intelligence that works like law, then from there they can study that and then see to apply it. But the scriptures say the practical way for people to understand the culture is through the Puranas, because they give the point in a story form like that. So that's where it is. So it's been limited. We don't have to read everything. You know, we know it's not this and that, but the Puranic aspects of the Bhagavatam, for us, the Satvic Puranas, Mahabharata, Ramayana, Chaitanya Charitamrita, you know, the histories of the Acharyas, the stories like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, you know, it's like he's 12 years old, right? We heard the other day how a very opulent situation. That was up to 12. Then at 12, I think some kind of disease hit, plague, some kind of thing, wiped out practically everybody in the village. So then you have no men in the family left except Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He's 12 years old. His mother and his unmarried sister. He goes to Calcutta. right? Then in Calcutta, he gets a job like that, maintains the family, arranges for his sister's marriage, pays for the whole thing, organizes all that, and then continues on. And this way, then gradually comes up to where he gets schooled and then becomes a magistrate. So that is duty. So it's understood is that the son has that duty towards the mother, towards the sisters, towards like this. And so they take care. And so if it's in their mind, then they do that. They don't harass their sister. They don't harass their mother. They come to a more mature platform. So these kind of things are there. And we see it works nicely. He was pleased. His mother was pleased. His sister was pleased. And if someone has an attitude, then nobody's pleased, right? Son is annoyed because mother's always on his case. Mother's annoyed because the son doesn't behave properly. Sister's annoyed because nothing's more annoying than annoying brothers. So then the three of them are unhappy, right? But if the attitude of duty is there, all three of them are happy. So if you contemplate that, then you can see this works. It works. And so then you try to contemplate, how does that apply in my life? So contemplation is how it will be gained. The brahmachari is gaining it by contemplation. He's got the foundation from his family before going to the educational system. But in the system, then they point it out to him, because in the house, it may or may not, he may or may not contemplate it. Girls have a tendency to contemplate in the family. Boys tend to take everything for granted. They don't even think about it. It's just some mystic phenomena that there's always food on the table, clothes always get washed, the house is always in order, even though whenever they move through it, it's like, a tidal wave and everything. But somehow or another, after they've gone through and it's a mess, it just mystically fixes itself, right? They don't connect that there is people, in the house that do that, like their mother. That doesn't dawn on them, right? So then the difficulty is then the educational system has to point that out to the boys. Like that. Therefore, the attitude of menial service is there, is that you learn what is the service. You learn how to do those things yourself. Then only someone who's been a good brahmachari, he can appreciate women. He can respect women. He can take care of women. Because he knows what they can do, what is their value. Otherwise, we see the modern society, women aren't valued, right? They look nice, they're nice to touch, but that's about it. More than that, then what's the value, right? There's an idea that there's this ancient concept that they could cook, and take care of the house, so sometimes there's that idea, but it's not necessarily a deep understanding. So therefore, there is no value in women, and therefore they can't take care. Of course, women have to be needed, so that much need is more than nothing. So they'll go along with it. But otherwise, it's a little disappointing that the men are so useless. They're so, what would be a relevant term, kind of to dweeby or something like that, that they're just useless, because they don't really know their position or the women's position, so they can't themselves provide any direction, they can't give any shelter, can't give any support like that, all around like that. They may be able to go out and get some money, but money is just the medium through which you're going to use for the emotional exchange, the other aspects of needs in life. Right? You have money to support the relationship. Money isn't the relationship like that. So these kind of things are then lacking. So the whole idea is that the system then makes one conscious of it. That's the point. The mothers, they make the daughters conscious of what is going on in the house, in relationships with others. And then they support that for the men. But then in a situation outside of the home, then they have to be trained, what is the home? Otherwise, they just won't become conscious like that. So that's, therefore, training is the key like that. means humans are created by training. They don't happen by chance. But, does that make any sense, or did we get too far into the tangent? We missed the point sometimes. So it's not an uncommon phenomenon. Is that okay? Yeah? Okay. You understand? So the point was is contemplation. That was the point. Is that therefore it's not, you have to contemplate it. Yeah, it means what you gained in your home from conception up to about 5 years, that is gained without contemplation. After that, you have to contemplate it. Otherwise, you don't get it. Like that. So therefore, that's the important thing, is contemplation has to be there. So whatever situation you can create that makes contemplation, that's what you need. Like that. So if hearing from others, does that, sitting on your own and reading does that, or, doing some practical service and then things become understood. Whatever, you have to find what makes you contemplate things and understand them, practice them, realize them. Then that makes all this alive. Otherwise, the tendency is all this is not alive. That's the principle. Like that. Is that okay? In other words, you're not going to solve the problem in 5 minutes. It's a generational endeavor. Prabhupada looked at it as a 3-generation endeavor. The first generation does their best. The second generation that's where they start from. And then they take it to the next, where the third generation is able to gain the benefits of what Prabhupada's talking about. Like that. And their gaining of it then will be beneficial for the second and first, because they're the grandparents and the parents. But it's the third generation that will be situated in this nicely. So if you have that kind of vision, then, reading the whole Bhagavatam isn't such a bad solution. It's a couple of years, but we're talking generations, 3 generations. Is that okay? So end here, otherwise it's still weekday. Okay. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jainita Gaura Premanandi ki.